Hey Beeps, it's me, Christine, and I want to share with you a game-changing product that has improved my sleep and daily health. So let's dive in. You all know through my journey, I have struggled with sleep, being afraid of it, not getting quality sleep, and not being able to regulate my temperature throughout the night. I definitely learned the hard way, but sleep matters big time. It's when your muscles repair, your brain detoxes, and your body can work on cellular renewal. We just can't afford to miss out on an adequate amount of high-quality sleep, which is kind of hard when you have a rare disease. There's not much that I control in this real life, but one of the easiest and most effective ways to get better sleep every single night is through temperature regulation. Studies actually prove cooler temperatures lead to a deeper, more restful sleep, and that insomniacs actually lack this natural drop in core body temperature, which is what keeps them up at night. Personally, I run hot. This means that even if my room is super cold, I wake up in a pool of sweat, uncomfortable, changing my clothes several times throughout the night. It's frustrating for obvious reasons, and this is why I was so relieved to discover this transformative product from Chili. The Cube from Chili Sleep is a system that fits right over the top of your mattress and uses water to control the temperature of your bed, which helps lower your internal temperature and triggers deeper, relaxing sleep. Since water has 30 times more thermal conductivity than air, these systems are a lot more effective than just cranking up the AC. I mean, I keep my house at 65, so it has to be true. Ever since I started using the Cube system, I've noticed I fall asleep a lot faster, sleep deeper, and wake up feeling fully rested. Now, my wife is not a polar bear like me and likes to sleep a little bit warmer. So I love that we can each have our own temperatures on either side of the bed. Chili products can range between 55 and 115 degrees. Right now, Chili is offering my audience a really great deal. When you go to chilisleep.com/findyourrare20, you get 20% off the Cube All Sleep Systems with Find Your Rare 20. Sleep is something we could all use more of, and we can all take small steps towards getting better sleep to improve our life in big ways. I hope you'll check out the Chili Sleep System and see why I love their product so much.
Hey peeps, I'm your host Christine and I'm flying solo. Today we are speaking with Marie, a proud disabled artist, activist, and the founder of Rare. Ha! But not this Rare. R period, A period, R period, E period. Rare by Marie. You may be familiar with some of her work, including the Chronically Spooky series. On top of running her own business, she is the content manager at Diversibility and the social media manager at Omnium Circus. I don't know how to tell you how excited I am about today, so let's just dive in.
This is the Because We're Strong podcast, where we sit down every week to get your stories and insight on how to navigate this rare life. You can expect everything real and raw in the hopes that your story, along with ours, helps another person who is dealing with a similar rare struggle. So grab your favorite drink, a comfy blanket, and buckle in, because rare disease isn't for the faint of heart.
Welcome, Marie. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I have to admit, like, I do feel like we're a little bit of like twin spirits, I guess, or something, because, you know, rare all caps period. And, you know, rare all caps periods. So, you know, I'm excited for today's episode. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got on this rare journey?
Yeah, so I was actually born with a rare disease called multiple hereditary exostosis. So I was born on this journey, basically. And most of my life, I didn't even recognize myself as disabled. I was always really forced, I guess, to mask. And so I felt like I had to really be able-bodied and I couldn't really be disabled. So even though I had this genetic condition that completely shaped my entire body, and I was like, really honestly sick most of my life, I constantly acted as if I wasn't. I constantly pushed myself. When I was a child, so with MAG, it's such a broad diagnosis because it causes a bunch of bone tumors that have a higher chance of becoming cancerous But then it also causes a heparin sulfate defect that it impacts every part of your body, and they don't really tell us about that. They only tell us about the bone disorder. I only found out about the heparin sulfate maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and then it answered all of my symptoms and everything that's been ever my life. And so, like, with heparin sulfate, it's connected to neurodiversity, it's connected to migraines, it's connected to gastric problems. I also have Ehlers-Danlos. Like, there's so many problems that I have because of my genetic defect. Growing up, I had no idea. I just had bone tumors. And so it, like...
Doesn't everybody have bone tumors?
Right? Isn't that normal? And so really, I put all of my energy into my academics because I couldn't be physical. And by the age of 19, I was directing primetime television in Market 68. And so
it's fine. Not a big deal.
Yeah. So like, I like looking back, I'm like, I honestly can't believe they had no idea I was autistic. Like, what 19-year-old is directing primetime television?
But wait, time out. Let's roll this back a little bit. Now we're bringing a whole new diagnosis in here. And I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on, but I just, holy cow. Like, I look at everything you do and you just never know what anyone is struggling with.
Yeah, you never know. Like, I can't even list all my diagnoses because I forget them all. You know, there's more fingers and toes. Like, there's more diagnoses than I have fingers and toes to count on. That's just the life when you have a genetic rare disorder. Like, it impacts everything and the doctors don't know. So they just keep going. Like, I found out I was neurodiverse and autistic at 26 years old. I'm 27.
How did you know, a lot of people who find out these diagnoses later, I mean, specifically talking about like neurodivergent disorders, they really have a sense of grief or, you know, like some sort of like putting it together process. Can you tell us a little bit about like what that was like? I mean, this is only a year ago.
Yeah, for me, it was amazing. Honestly, there was no grief whatsoever. It was like, you know, like the clouds open up and the light shines down and you finally understand why you're so fucking anxious all the time. Like, you finally understand why you cannot socialize with people like other people can. It's like, for me, there was no grieving process. It was a healing process. I was able to stop pushing myself to be so social. Like, I'm great talking disability rights. Don't get me wrong, but my DMs really make me anxious. Like, all of one-on-one, so anxious. And like, I've always...
Can I bring up one more though?
Yeah.
One more. Tell me about this. Am I the only one out there that like gets into a flare, gets her phone back and has a complete meltdown because there's 374 text messages and
oh, yeah.
Let's not even talk about emails or DMs, like just the text messages in, and they're my close people, right? And like, yeah. Oh girl, I feel that.
And like, what's so bad about with me, with my neurodiversity, I'll get so overwhelmed and then I won't open them. I won't look at them. I have.
But okay. So I'm like this too. And I do want to say in my head, the process that goes is like, mm-hmm. if I don't open them, right, then like the reminder still remains. Mm-hmm. And then they won't know that I did, like, I have my read receipts on because I want people to know, like, I didn't read this. I purposely leave it unread because of my own anxiety. And, you know, but I have messages in here from months ago that have the blue dots still because I can't open them.
Same. Oh my God. So same. Like, I'm sorry, whoever's listening to this who had messaged me last July. I'm sorry. I just can't open it.
I can't do it. Like, and especially if I can read a little bit of it and it makes me, like, if it's,
it's even worse.
Yes. Like something that, you know, the tone or whatever have yeah. you, just know that your first three words really matter.
They mean a lot. Yeah, totally feel that. Like, and again, though, because I'm on this healing process, I'm letting myself not read them because I tell myself I don't have to live by other people's rules. I don't have to go by what they go by. for me, I get anxious with messaging. And if someone wants to be empathetic and understanding to me, then they will be empathetic and understanding. And if they won't, then I'm not going to be friends with you. I don't need you in my life anymore. There was like 26 years I had to deal with that. I can't anymore. Now I get to choose.
Yeah, like, I love that. Yes. Now I get to choose. And I know we're in slightly different boats because like this has been, you know, from birth. And but for me, I do feel in so many ways that I've been set free by being like, I know I can choose to own everything that makes me weird and rare. Mm-hmm. And I can choose to own my, you know what I mean? Like, and I can choose, like, and I feel like I would have set free by the rare experience, you know?
Seriously. Like, I will go to my dying day saying how being pridefully disabled is the most liberating thing ever. And with that, it's like, you're just accepting who you are. It's like, this is my life. I am riddled with diagnoses. I am different than everyone else. I have to live life the way that works for me because the other way is not too good. And then it's like, I've only really been like 1 year into my like anti-ableist lifestyle, like my radicalization of my anti-ableist lifestyle to where it's like, I'm fully pridefully disabled. I'm accepting my autistic identity.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I think I really want to get into this because I think it's actually a hot button topic right now going on and yours and Erin's pages. You can shout out Erin's page in a second because I know you guys are really in on this and I honestly feel like you guys are getting a lot of crap right now. So, and mind you, I don't like, we're going to get into this, but can you explain to our listeners when you say pridefully disabled, what are you encompassing? Just clear it all out for the record.
Yeah. So pridefully disabled means that you are pridefully yourself. Like for me, I identify disabled because that's the way I'm going to be able to dismantle the ableist society. That's what's in my power. I can choose to identify however I want. If someone doesn't want to be disabled, that's their decision. Like for me, very pridefully disabled. And so with that, it's like being pridefully disabled means you are no longer masking yourself, your identity, your true authentic being for the sake of the ableist society. You are taking up space. You are demanding your accommodations. You're saying no when you don't want to do something. You are knowing that your disability doesn't make you a burden. It just makes you disabled. And disabled is not a bad thing whatsoever. The only negative connotation that is really with disabled is there because of the ableist society. Back in the 80s, the advocates picked the term disability and disabled because they were fighting handicap. And so it's like in the beginning, we chose the word disabled to fight the ableist society, but the ableist society took it from us. And so being pridefully disabled is just taking back that term in a way. And it's like, it's just being who you are, unapologetically you, knowing that a diagnosis, whether it's diagnosed or not, doesn't make you inferior. Because I have to say that because in the beginning, I just said a medical diagnosis. And someone pointed out to me that some people, they're not diagnosed by doctors. And when I say a medical diagnosis, I don't mean you're diagnosed by a doctor. Because doctors, they suck at their job sometimes. And they will miss your diagnosis. And that does not mean that you don't have a diagnosis. You have a diagnosis. You know what the fuck goes on in your body. Like, being pridefully disabled is knowing what the fuck goes on in your body and refusing to accept anything less from anyone who has no idea.
You know, why do you think there's so much, like, to me, that's basic humanity. And that's like, I live by, you know, the assumption, like full-heartedly live not only by my disability, but like, you know, a member of the LGBTQ community, you know, extremely anxious person, you know, just a lot of things that I feel like I own my darkness, suicide, you know, owning the darkness. And I always say, come as you are, you know, even just just show up. Like I'm almost at a loss for words because it seems like it's so basic. So can you kind of like go over like maybe some of the, cause like I said, I was in your comments the other day writing that you were fire. And I just like, I was starting to see the pushback, which is exhausting, but like, I'd love to hear one, some of the pushback and then your pushback to the pushback.
Yeah. So I'm like, whenever there's negativity in my comment section, I choose whether or not I engage with it. More often than not, I probably won't. Just because if it's an opinion, that it's your opinion and it has no place on my page, so why am I going to acknowledge it anyway? You know, like, but there are comments that I will acknowledge because they're asking to be educated, or it's like a completely wrong stance that like is, it's just something that calls to me to be spoken out about. So ones that I'll really comment back to are people who unknowingly are spitting out ableist notions, because really the problem really stems from all of our internalized ableism. The ableist society doesn't like to be challenged, and it's really, ableism is one of the biggest generational curses of all. It's passed from generation to generation to generation. And I mean, it has been in, it's been in play since before civilizations ever started. So the ableist society is archaic. And so it's like, we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years of ableism to unsubscribe to. And it's hard.
When you just said that, I have a question. And this is like, honestly, off the cuff, no script. This is like, I studied science, and so when you said that it was like so whatever, I thought to myself, ableism in a way is like kind of connected to natural selection, right? That, like we, yes. Am I crazy? Or like, no. I don't know if I'm either like really going off the rails here or.
Honestly, the core of ableism is survival of the fittest. It's the animal kingdom. Ableism runs the animal kingdom. And that's why the first mark of civilization was a healed femur bone, because it showed that someone didn't leave someone out to die when they couldn't go run for their food. They took care of that person. They nursed them back to health. And not only that, they took care of them until they died, because that healed bone, who knows how that person was going to recover? Were they walking better? Were they able to run? You know, like they had to give care to that person. And I also heard that if it's the same fossil, because someone told me that they thought it was the same fossil, but they couldn't confirm it, but it was also a deaf person as well. And so it's like the first side of civilization is anti-ableism. And that's what makes it so hard, though, too. We have to understand we come from the animal kingdom. We Homo sapiens are animals. So ableism's ingrained in us. And like, you know, in true, I don't even know how to say the word. It begins with an I. It's just in us. And it's hard to get out of those natural fucking thoughts. It's a natural thought, because survival of the fittest is ingrained in us from the animal kingdom. Like, you have to actively be anti-ableist. You have to actively step away from the group, which is so hard to do psychologically. Because groupthink and group mentality will always be the thing. And so you have to break away from the group and you have to actively stand on your own. It's scary. Like, when I started my anti-ableist lifestyle, I got...
Can you tell us what that... Like, what does that, like, really mean? Because I'm loving it. I want it to be trending. I mean...
I'm trying.
Oh my gosh. Like I want to be on this trend. Like, do I have to eat a certain way? Tell me all the things.
So basically, anti-ableist lifestyle is doing everything opposite from what the ableist society would want from you. And to be honest, it looks different from every single person, because every single person has certain situations in their life that they might not be able to unmask at work. They might not be able to do certain aspects of an anti-ableist lifestyle.
Hold on. I just want to, because we're doing, I feel like we're fully getting educated here. Can you talk to our listeners about masking? What do you mean when you say masking?
Yes. So masking is when you are hiding any aspect of your medical condition for the sake of society, for the sake of someone other than yourself.
So, can you give an example?
Yeah, of course. So you're at work. Let's say you're like me and you live with hemiplegic migraines, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, myalgic encephalitis, MHE, and a whole slew of diagnoses, and you are in severe pain 24/7. But you go to that job and you sit there and you pull a 16-hour shift with a smile on your face with zero painkillers, just doing your job, because you can't take those painkillers because you have to direct the show and you have to be able to be there for that show. And so you mask, you put a smile on that face, you put some makeup on, and you just do your job. You act like everyone else. You hide your pain. It's like, I can't tell you guys how many days I've lived like that. Like, we all live like that. We all feel like we cannot show when we're suffering. Because when we're suffering, well, it can either go the other way. We're going to either get beyond empathy, we're going to get pity from people, or we're going to get gaslit. There's never a...
Or I always like the... Oh, well, hope you like the dismissive answers, you know, like, oh, hope you feel better. But gosh, I mean, I was sitting here thinking when you were saying that definition, I was like, oh my God, like since I've been sick in the workplace, I have masked every single thing and I had my students wearing Rare shirts. Like I was all in it and but still, when my back was against the wall, I chose to step up, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Or something else toxic.
Oh, yeah. Because you do it for the team. You got to overcome. You got to overcome the overcome shit. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
Like, I was pushed so much to overcome that. My job was killing me. I was slowly dying because my body couldn't keep up with it. I caused 2 strokes. Like, wow. Literally within a month and a half of being out of that hostile work environment, I was able to get my walking ability back.
Wow.
I was able to actually start to heal because I was in a wheelchair for months after I had my stroke. And it's like the masking is so exhausting. And we don't just mask in a workplace. We mask everywhere, especially if you're autistic. Especially if you have an invisible illness, a chronic illness, like you're always masking, even if you don't realize it, because it's our survival. That's how we survive, is by masking. Because if they find out we're disabled in the workplace, they'll fire us. They'll make our life hell. They'll make it a hostile work environment. No one can find out that we're disabled, which means we can't ask for our accommodations, which means that we can't get protected by the ADA. Because if our workplace doesn't know that we're disabled, then we are not protected by the ADA. And so it's like the anti-ableist lifestyle is really something that you choose because you're sick and tired of the same old fucking shit. Because the ableist society is never going to get better if we keep living by that rule. It's never going to be dismantled if we keep allowing it to thrive. And it's so hard too, because we all are cogs in our own oppression. Every day we have to be, you know, like how else are we going to survive if we don't mask? How else are we going to survive if we don't challenge the ableist society? Because it's like when I challenged the ableist society, I lost my career. I lost my almost 10-year career, everything. Like I was like,
I lost my job too. I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about?
Yeah. It's like, once you take that stand, it's like you stand alone, and not only do you stand alone, you lose everything. And when you're losing everything, you have people saying, "Well, what did you expect?
What did you do wrong?" Right? Well, like
it's like, why did you say anything? You should have just kept doing this. Like you should have just kept masking. You should have just kept doing. You should have just kept living in that discrimination. And it's like, what? It's like. You even have disabled people saying this to you, you know? Like
that's the scary part.
That's the hardest part. It's like, I understand my parents saying that to me. I understand people from the greatest generation saying that stuff to me. You know, that's what they've grown up in. But to have a disabled person say to me, well, what did you expect? And not only that, like, I've also had disabled people come up to me doing the other way around, saying that, like, I was privileged that I got to do that. And so other people can't do that. So I shouldn't be talking about it. So I shouldn't advocate about this. So I shouldn't do that stuff.
That's the thing, though. Can we just quickly stop here for a second and say, one, I can't agree with you more. I have a lot more, not patience, but like empathy, and my heart extends more to people that, even if they're not willing to learn, I think if you can't understand, then you know what? You're blessed. And I'm screaming at the rooftops, this could happen to you, but that, to each his own. But when we get into the disability community attacking itself, or, you know, moms versus, like, you know, it's worse if it's this. No. We're not like, stop. And I don't, it hurts so much worse when that happens. And, you know, I get a lot of feedback like, oh, well, we're not going to partner or do anything with you because, you know, you're for profit. And, but basically we don't do anything with people who profit from other people's stories. Mind you, like, and for me, this is like, you took my heart and you just shredded it in a cheese grinder. And I'm sitting there sobbing. You don't really care about your message, but, you know, because my intentions were then misread, whatever, the whole story of it. But like, and then when I dust myself off the next day, the amount of frustration and anger I feel that it comes from within the community is just like, I can't understand it.
Yes. Like, and honestly, it's the internalized ableism that's within the community that does it. Like, I really truly think that the reason that disability rights, disability pride, disability justice, the reason that all of these movements that are so fucking necessary have not advanced is because the disability community is too busy tearing apart people who are trying.
Yeah, I agreed. One more time, please, for the people in the back, because yes, stop competing with each other. Stop trying to, you know, tear everyone down. Help someone when they come to you. Oh, please say that again, because yes.
Like, I think it's bullshit when people come to my videos. Like, I made a video about why I choose to disclose. In that video, I never told a single motherfucker to disclose. I said, this is why I choose to, because I don't want to work for someone that's going to discriminate against me. I choose this. Nowhere in my stuff do I ever tell people to do it, because you'll know if I tell you to do something. I will specifically say it because I don't know your life. I'm not going to ever.
Well, exactly. Like, and here's the thing. This is part, I know that this is my calling and this is part of my journey. And I know that that's the fire I have inside of me.
Exactly.
Trust me, because every day I want to quit and I don't. And I'm not even being funny. That's a real life sentence that, and so I know my why, right? And the thing is that my why comes from pain and hurt, and it helps me heal, and it gives me purpose, right? But it does not have to give you purpose. You could be lobbying on Capitol Hill. You could be sitting on your couch, never watching a disability. I don't look, I'm not someone who's going to impose on you that like, oh, you should be standing up. Do I think you should be? When I say show up, stand up, speak up, I just mean in the sense of you don't have to say anything, but show up for the people you love. Like,
exactly. And like, it's really important too for people to understand on our pages, it's always our brands. It's always our advocacy. It's always personal advocacy. If you go to another advocate's page and you tell them how they should be advocating, what they should be doing, you're being ableist. You're doing exactly what the ableist society tells us to do. You are gaslighting and speaking over another disabled soul because you think you know best. You think your thoughts are superior to that person's. And that's ableism, and you're only commenting for clout. If you truly had a problem with what that person was saying, you truly wanted to understand better, you truly wanted to explain, you truly wanted to have a conversation, you would DM that advocate.
Yes.
You would DM them.
And can I honestly say, there has been plenty of times where I have chosen not to go in on a rant or go in on something. Maybe I'm tired. Maybe I'm this. Maybe I just need a second to process. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Like, or I disagree with some things, right? Like, I'm not, like, I don't think just because, you know, we're saying disability pride, we're saying, oh, absolutely everything goes and whatever have you. But what I am saying is that they put content out there and they're starting a conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't need to distract them by making them explain themselves. Because I feel like you know when the content is vicious, AKA the Reddit page.
Exactly. And not only that, it's like advocacy is so personal. Every advocate who is a patient advocate is doing it because they have personal experiences that have made them feel unheard, that have made them feel not seen, that have made them feel inferior to everybody. And so when I'm seeing someone sharing their perspective on their page, what they believe, I don't have to agree with them. All I have to do is make sure I'm not speaking over them. Make sure that they are getting their fucking time, their fucking voices heard. Make sure that what they think is actually being said. Where I get to speak is my page, because that's my safe space. I don't even get why people feel the need to comment on other people's stuff negatively. I will only build people up. When I see something, I'm like, oh, dude, great job. Congrats. You deserve this.
And also, that's the other thing. Let's get to celebrating others in a second. Mm-hmm. But first, I want to say right here, shoot, brain fog. I want to say right here because we other people's pages.
Advocacy and ableism.
Oh, God, I love brain fog. I think where I wanted to say is like, you know, and I just did a post about this. Like, I do not respond to to negativity. Like that's not, you know, and I get a lot of hate from that. It's like, well, you have to educate. Here's my thing. You know, the comments that are about education or whatever, or are just genuinely asking, and you know, the comments that are mean, and you know, the comments that are in between. And here's the thing is that, you know what? Unless it's an egregious comment or, you know, something that I feel will hurt my overall mission, you have a right to say what you want to say, but like, I am not going to give you any of my energy because let me tell you, I barely have enough energy to do what I'm doing. So I'm sure as hell not going to spend time giving you negative, you know, negative or positive attention is attention. And I'm not doing it. I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's like, too, like I leave up the comments that are hateful. I leave them up. I might not read them, but I will leave them because I want people to see. I want people to see how fucking hateful the ableist society can be. I want them to see how infighting is happening everywhere over just people trying to really get visibility to the issues. It's like, unless it's something to where it's too far. Like last year when I got back into advocacy, so the R.A.R.E. actually stood for something. It stood for Rare Advocates Representing Everyone. And I created a little community thing. I tried.
All I know is, okay, guys, she made it an acronym. I just made it all caps. I feel like.
Oh, no. It's all caps.
No, I know. We're both all caps. I'm all caps. But I was saying, like, you made it a nice, cool acronym. Oh. Everyone always thinks Rare is an acronym. And I'm like, no, not at all.
See, I regret making it the acronym. Because the people that I started my community with and I really believed would be my friends and really thought that they wanted to learn. Oh, man, dude, did they cancel me so bad? Like, all because I signed a contract with my former employer that limited all of my advocacy work to anti-ableism. They canceled me. It was awful. They even knew about it before even signing their contracts. They knew about everything, but they did it for clout. They fucking went all over. I signed 30 people to book them for speaking. Like, it was a crazy thing. And they got all the people to, like, break their contracts. They got all the people to harass me all over Instagram. I was, like, threatened. I was harassed. Like, people were messaging me on my private page, threatening me with bodily harm, all because these two girls did not like the way that I advocated. That was it. Like, I never said anything bad to them. I was so nice to them. They, like, made all of these lies and even said that I bullied one of my best friends for being married to a black man. Crazy ass shit, dude. Crazy shit. It stopped once I showed all the receipts. But it's like, why do we even have to do that? Why do we even have to? Why do we have to be on guard with everyone? Why do we have to always be like in these situations to where it's our own people. The people who did that to me were from the MHE community. They were my people. But now they're not my people. And I swear to God, that MHE community better never motherfucking claim me. I'm telling you right now. Like, after what they did, But it's like the infighting, the toxicity. It's like everyone.
Yeah, sorry. I think you're going in this direction. I just want to insert it here, which was the infighting, the toxicity. And then here's it is right now. The competition, yes. The idea that, like, I can't tell you how many times it has come up that basically, like, Rare makes so much money and, you know, it's something like I should be giving away for free. Okay, let me tell you this. Like, I tell everyone all the time, Rare has been in the red since we opened. I literally work. I have not left my full-time job because I'm afraid if I do, I will lose this. And I even got fired from my full-time job, found another full-time job, and still trying to keep this open. Give 15% away. And to every sale, 15% goes away. That's and like I said, we're not talking a little bit in the red, Marie. We're talking like thousands and thousands a month in the red. And
dude, I have to stop you right here because this is fucking bullshit. Why do you have to justify this? Why does a disabled-owned business have to justify anything? Why can't a disabled-owned business make profit off of their energy, off of their time, off of their work, off of everything? You know, I would rather a disabled-owned business make money off of my fucking story than the fucking Mighty or someone that doesn't pay anybody. I would rather that shit.
And here's the thing is that, like, yes, I also have a ton of free platforms. Like, I have the podcast, I have the blog, I have the takeover. I offer, it's not just like I'm over here selling merch. And also, it's also like I chose an outlet, which is art. And guess what? I came up with Rare in the Box. It set me, it has meaning to me. It caught on. You know what I mean? And like, and so, Nike, Adidas, no one, we don't question them, right? He had a dream. Never. He went through something. If you read the book, right? Mm-hmm. Like he went through something. And so he then created stuff like, and that's not questioned. But yet, you know, I'm over here being told that I have a patent on the port accessible sweatshirt, right? Mm-hmm. It's $76 because it cost me so much money per one. To make that to get the prototype and everything done was for only 100 sweatshirts, $7,000. Do the math. I am once you like I get me to mainstream, get me into Target. And you will see the prices you want. But like,
People have to understand when you are a small business, and not only a small business, you're one person when. Like, the A-List Society makes it so hard for us to even thrive. It makes it so hard for us to survive. It makes it so hard for us to make any money whatsoever. So, like, when there's a disabled soul who is, like, really trying so hard to, like, swim out of the poverty that the A-List Society forces us into by creating a business, by creating an art, by selling their art, by taking whatever skill that they have and trying to monetize off of it, it's sickening for any disabled soul to say anything negative towards that. That's sickening, especially when motherfucking Tommy Hilfiger's Adaptivewear is so expensive. Like,
well, and also, honestly, it's not adaptive. It's not even adaptive. It's a three-quarter. Where's my? I have one here somewhere. I just ordered a bunch of three-quarter zips. That's not accessible. Like, it's a three-quarter zip. I can't. This is like a very sensitive, you know. But you're right.
This is a really big problem about the ableist society and all of these people who say anything negative towards a disabled creator for trying to make profit off of their work. You are being ableist because the ableist society has ingrained in you that disabled people don't deserve to be paid for their energy. They don't deserve to be paid for their work. They don't deserve to be paid for anything. What? Am I supposed to give you free art? Am I supposed to give you free everything? Am I not supposed to be paid for any of my time, any of my skills, any of the years of life that has went into every piece of art I make? What? Is that not worthy for you?
But then can we, this is, I want to go where it, because right here, this is now where I go into social media and the issues with mm-hmm. paying. I mean, the shirt you always wear, like pay disabled content mm-hmm. creators.
Erin, you know, she made that one.
Link in the bio, Jesus. Link in the show notes, peeps. But so this is a whole thing too, right? Is mm-hmm. like, how come something will go, you know, on my personal, like my personal CEO page, right? I will do a half-assed ad, put a reel up, whatever. My disabled-owned business, which always has a message behind it, will have like 43 views. Now, I can't make money on my other account because it only has 2,000 followers, right? But I can't make money on an account that doesn't, whatever. And then let's go. So once you finish with that, I'd like to hear your thoughts on now paid brand partnerships, right? Mm-hmm. And what, like, it's funny because they always want, like, there's contracts, right? And people outside of the, like, for instance, you know, there's this product you can really, it's great, right? But mm-hmm. it's expensive. And so, you know, they want to give you 50% off, but you can't pay $1,000 for the product because you're not getting paid anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then they swap it for product, right? Swap. Mm-hmm. But then there's another person on social media, right? Who maybe is an athlete or whatever have you and would benefit from the same product, right? But mm-hmm. not, but do you get what I'm going here? I pick it up here because I'm getting feisty. So you pick it up here.
Yeah. It's like, I found when it comes, because I've been, you know, I've been a creator for like over a year, and honestly, I've only started making money on it from the summer. I went all but 12 months without making anything from my social media stuff. And so that's for anyone who thinks it's quick. No, it's not quick at all. It takes so long. It takes so hard. You put so much stuff into it. And then finally you get a pop-up saying, hey, you can monetize. That's how it happens. It's not.
And then your views go down.
Yeah. And then it's just some weird shit. You go by the algorithm gods, basically. But it's like you at least have that chance. But when it comes to brands, I've noticed that a lot of brands also will prey upon us. So I refuse to do any CBD type of oils, any CBD stuff on Instagram. Do not message me. I will not be your brand affiliate because I have my medical card. I don't, like, you know, like, I'm all for that stuff. Don't get me wrong. I just think you guys are preying upon chronic pain patients with stuff that won't really work. But I mean, and again, you know, maybe people don't live in a state where MMJ is legal, so maybe this would be good for them. But it's just the concepts behind it. I know that they're just looking for certain people, pain people, and just trying to prey upon the pain patients. But then there's another type of brand that, like, I like to work with, because I remember I worked with this one brand that it was like this headache thing. It was like a relief pillow, and it's like filled with like lavender.
Oh, a relief pack. Yes. Another one. We'll link those down there because, like we said, it's not just about us, but we'll link that down there. Yeah. Relief pack. Yes. Yes.
That's a brand I like to work with. They sent me one of their little things. I sent some pictures. I haven't posted about them in a while. That was last year, but still, like, it was like a really nice interaction. Like, it's people that aren't preying upon us. It's people who actually have this thing that really want to see if it helps people. And it's like, I've also noticed, like, people get really, they get weird when they notice that people are starting to make money off of social media. Maybe they'll unfollow. Maybe they'll start making snide remarks.
No, snide remarks.
And it's like, I think that stems from jealousy, kind of, in a way.
It does.
Like, and you know?
Can we talk about something? This is like, this is going to be an unpopular point of view, but I feel like you and I can have a very good conversation. That's, you know, like I said, even if whatever, we can listen to each other.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. So I genuinely believe if I would have Googled some, like, I started Rare out of like desperation and loneliness. And mm-hmm. if I would have Googled and found something, I think my story would have been different. Mm-hmm. The same thing with like the podcast. You know, there's more now, but like at the time there was not mm-hmm. any rare disease podcasts, et cetera. And I guess my point is just everyone trying to do their own thing, and that's okay. I'm not against that. Mm-hmm. It's the cutting in, cutting under. Like I mm-hmm. always said, I will not get to the top mm-hmm. by cutting anyone down, because in my opinion, I've been at the bottom all alone. Why the fuck would I want to be on the top all alone? To me, I don't like, that's not what I'm not about that. And so, you know, I'd love to know your thoughts. Like I said, because I know people keep things close to the vest because, you know, they worked hard. And trust me, I work 15 hours a day and then I go do rare. Like I get that. But I guess I also feel like sometimes when people come to me and they're trying, I want to give. And then, you know, the next week I see something and I'm like, well, I guess you needed it more than me, you know?
Yeah, it's a very fine line, honestly, because it's like, I think everyone should make money off of their story if they can. You want to make a podcast? Make a podcast. You want to do something? Do something. You know, I think you want to become a freelancer? Become a freelancer. Become a creator. Do that. But also at the same time, like, it's like, there's that big but at the end, because you cannot take advantage of other creators as you're trying to become a creator. Like, this is something my friend Erin is always telling me. People like always are trying to pick her brain. Well, you got to pay to pick the brains. You got to pay for this consulting stuff. You cannot just assume that because we're disabled too, that we're just going to help you out of the kindness of our hearts. Because yeah, we're kind. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I will always support people. I will try to be your biggest cheerleader. I will try to share whatever I can share. But I also know my worth. There comes a time where you have to pay $35 per hour to talk to me about publishing a book, to talk to me about doing certain...
Which is also a very reasonable price for that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's respect. It's respect. It's the, I respect your time, I'm going to pay you. I respect that you want to pay me, I'm going to make it a low rate.
Well, you and know? It's also, I feel like that too, like that's what I do with custom work. And like for me, I know that there's a 700% markup rate on Etsy. And that's why I created the Create with Rare section, because I love doing this work. And I think people should have access. If they like personal things like I do, I would like them to have access at an affordable rate that is, you know, maybe only 50%. Like, so, you know, and when you break down my time, yes, I get it, what I'm making nothing. And I understand why. But there's like a give and take, you know, but then when it comes up and it's like, well, you design this awareness shirt and I spend hours doing it. And then, you know, the understanding was that it would be for free. Like I would then send you one for free. It gets tough. Like, especially when, I mean, like, I'm watching our savings, everything comes out of my savings. Like that's the big funder of a, you know, rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like too, like, it's so hard because you feel obligated as someone who has a bit more of a following, who is a bit more stable, you feel obligated to be like, oh, yes, I'll help you with this. Oh, yes, let's collaborate with that. And then it's like you get fucked over. Like they don't do what's right.
Or and, like posting, right? Like I think this is a great, like I can't tell you how many times I have sent, you know, things. And honestly, the we're talking – mm-hmm. The littlest you could have really done, right?
Oh man, yeah.
Is post it, and you know, you don't even share that you got it. Like you don't even tell, like, you know, like, and I don't need a thank you. It's not about that. It's about, you know, it's the same thing where it's like disabled, like if you're in this disabled community and you ever scroll past the disabled person's post, I'm telling you, like, this is not a good subject for me to get on. Everyone who's listening, you're probably guilty of it too. You know what? Press the like button, press the save to collection, and put it on your stories. It does no harm at all. Your image does not get saved. But you know what? You just increased, you know, the algorithm, and you did nothing.
It's the support, you know? Like, because if you're scrolling, it really doesn't take that much. Like, I don't scroll much on Instagram ever, actually. Maybe
I try to avoid Instagram.
I'll schedule maybe like 15 minutes for a scroll in the week. I don't know. Like, I don't actually scroll on Instagram, even though that's my biggest platform. It's like I'm more of the Facebook just because I have my personal people on there. Whereas Instagram, I feel more pressured for like everybody. But still, it's like it's the support. It's that little bit that you don't actually have to pay anything to support someone. You don't actually have to go out of your way to really support someone. Like over the summer in July, when Aaron and I did the Chronically Spooky X Pride, like Claiming Disability, Pridefully Disabled, Power and Pride thing, we scheduled like 9 panel talks for like the month. And Aaron put so much time into these ads. And like, we even had one person say, like, jump off the panel because Aaron asked if they would reshare the picture. Aaron put all of this time in this. Like,
and she, let me tell you, she does all of, well, and like, she always, she, like, whenever we work together, she always like takes on the graphics. And look, here's the thing. Do we have different aesthetics? 110%. Am I always thankful because it gets done and it's something I don't have to obsess over? Of course. Like, I'm like, thank you. Let reshare a million times. And I mean, I know for myself, I've been doing like, I'm stopping the scroll because I'm finding it's just not helping my mental health at all. And not for any other reason. It's just not working. Whenever I do go on, I try to go to the posts that are tipped me. I'm tagged in, and I don't care if it's 15 days later. I'm re-putting it on there.
Oh yeah, it's like that. That's the best way for someone to get my attention is to tag me in a post, because then I'll have a place to where I can look back, and then I can share it when I look. You know, like that's like anyone listening. If you want me to see something and reshare it, please tag me so I can. Other than that, I will totally forget sometimes. But it's like too with everything, like, You just never know what a share is going to do. You just never know. And like to have that person that feel like it was honestly insulting to have that person be like, oh, well, I'm not going to do this if I have to share this graphic. That person was expecting me to promote them so much in my panel, like to promote their work, to try and get people to go to their little class that they were making. It's like they wanted so much out of me that like it, what I did was all for free. Like I didn't get paid to do it. Like I didn't, like, you know, like I wanted to do something for Disability Pride Month. And it's like, they expected so much from me, telling me all of these things that they wanted to make sure was said about their program that they were doing, that they couldn't even reshare a graphic that Aaron made that had them on it.
It's unreal.
It's like the little things like that. That was so disrespectful, because it's like, again, she puts in so much work into her graphics. Like how Procreate and art is for me, that's Canva for Aaron, you know? And so it's,
yes.
Honestly, it's just so insulting to you, because that just shows that you don't have respect for people, that you won't help them in any little way, even though they're helping you in a big way to put you on a big platform with a big name. Oh, come on. You can reshare a picture. That's all you have to do. Like, it's not really doing much. But again, it's like, the competition, I guess.
I'm more with you. Like, I'd rather be with Procreate and like in my craft room and like never doing any of this. But unfortunately, that's not the way it goes. And but I'm so okay with being behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I know, and that sounds stupid because I'm so in front of it, but I'm only in front of it because I had, like, you know what I mean? Like, because, yeah, like, that's the only option.
Yeah, and I feel like, too, it's, like, you're only, like, on the camera because you have to. You know that's how it's going to get better, you know? Like, I when I started my advocacy again, I didn't want to do videos. I didn't want to do the on-camera stuff. Like, I just wanted to do art and stuff. But it's, like,
you can't sell your art unless they see your face.
Yeah, and like the algorithms were like really not working with art. Like I went from doing art every day to doing a reel every day. And I literally went up 1,300%. 1,300%
but like,
30 days.
I do want to ask this because like I do find that oftentimes I have to choose whether or not a design or something stays in my sketchbook or goes to Procreate and actually becomes something. Mm-hmm. Because, like, honestly, it social media and everything, like, takes over. And mm-hmm. I do think part of that, right, could be resolved with a few likes, you know? Like, mm-hmm. but, hey, what do I know?
Yeah, it's like there's so much at play, too, because, you know, it's like what I try to do is, like, I try not to get overwhelmed with social media, even though that's my career is social media for multiple companies and not just mine. So it's really hard. But, like, there's, like, once my husband gets home from the night, like, once, because he has a normal day job to where he leaves the house and comes back home. So once he gets home from work, that's my cue to, like, up, drop it. Like, okay, I'm done for work for the day. Now I'm going to do my art. Like, I literally force myself to do art.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's not going to happen. And then I also tell myself too, like, the art is my business. Like, that's my business, is my chronically spooky art. I work for Derivability and I'm trying to help build other people's brands, but, like, my art's my brand. And so it's like, even when I'm stopping working, am I really stopping working? Or am I just
no.
working for something for
You're
myself?
Just shifting. Yeah, well, you're yeah. just, how do you support that, right? Like, you support yeah. that because you, you know what I mean? Like, you support that because...
It's something, like, I want to do too, though. Like, it's a healthy work distraction for me. Like, I have found with my neuroticisms, with my neurodiversity, like, overworking is my addiction. I've never been one...
Me too!
But
I'm not sure that's a good thing, but
yeah, it's like for some reason, mental health professionals refuse to see overworking as an addiction. And so every time I would go to my mental health professional, they would applaud me for my manic addictions. They're like,
to be fair, I am a clinical therapist and I would not applaud you for that. Just so you know,
at least you were good then, because I had like three doctors, three of them, they missed every time I was in a manic episode, like because I was high functioning, because I had this fancy
well,
because
you could produce, right?
Yeah, like I had a fancy job that no one my age had. Like people would, like, mostly you have to go to college for the job that I had, but I went to two separate high schools to where I had a mass communications education by the time I graduated high school. And so I was far ahead of a lot of people and I was able to do that. So that was so impressive to the doctors. So there was no way I had any problem with executive functioning. There was no way I had any problem with mania. There's no way I had any problem with any mental thing. Maybe I'm just a little anxious. Maybe it's just anxiety. Oh, well, you know, maybe you did go through a lot of trauma in your life. You might just have PTSD. And don't get me wrong, I do have PTSD. But there's other stuff too. Like that's not... Like, I do have that, but I also have something that makes me pick my lips till they bleed. Can we talk about that, please? Or are you just going to tell me I'm doing great again? Because it's like, that's what they, like, it's hard for me to, like, even get mental health treatment because they're just going to, like, gaslight me, you know? Like, I am in mental health treatment, don't get me wrong, and, like, trying to communicate to them how, like, I'm having a really hard time with my depression. Have a really hard time with functioning. Like, I could get my work done, but oh, if you could see around me, but like, it's just chaos, you know?
I'm looking at chaos, so I get that.
Yeah, it is like, I think that's the life of a disabled creator, though, with a rare disease who has very limited energy, very limited functioning. It's like you do everything you can on the work, on the advocacy. And it's, like, so important to do what we do, though, because, like, living in an ableist society with a rare disease is the hardest fucking thing you'll ever have to do. It is. I know that there's other stuff that people have to live through that's hard, but, oh, my God, like, the situations that I have been put in, I'm shocked that I'm even alive. Like, I went to the hospital with my last stroke in 2020, and instead of treating me like the stroke patient, they treated me like a drug addict. And then once they tested me and found out I wasn't one, they had no idea what to do. They literally sent me home without any stroke treatment because the stroke symptoms resolved. And it's like that, like when I lost my career, I lost it from medical gaslighting, disability discrimination. And because a doctor doesn't actually write what's a life-threatening illness in a record, apparently. one doctor didn't put my stroke in a record, and that gave them the justification that they needed, even though it was in my main medical record, even though I had so much more records of that stroke happening, just because this one doctor said it wasn't in his, and even though he said, that doesn't mean it didn't happen, it just means I didn't write it down, doesn't matter, it didn't matter. And so, people in the ableist society have this notion of how doctors are and how the medical system is. And I really am starting to think it's because of shows like Grey's Anatomy and like all of
Hold on. Here's the thing. I am a huge, I want to be Meredith Grey, but last night I cannot believe you just said this. It's going to be, I swear. I know, guys, we're an hour in and we're going to have to do a part two. I want to end with this thought though. So last night, I've been walking out of the room this season whenever Grey's Anatomy's on. Mind you, everyone who knows me, I live. Like, I can watch season one through whatever. And then my mom yesterday put on The Resident. And she was – and I got her into The Resident, right? And Resident's another medical show, blah, blah, blah. And I had this moment there. I was wrapping Christmas gifts, and I was like, oh, my God. I haven't been able to watch it because I'm so angry that – not the kissing in the elevator, the hot sex and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. The idea that a doctor could see something and run to a team and want, not give up and want the, there were so, and I don't want to be mad at Grey's Anatomy, but I know why I can't get through, like why it hurts my stomach. It's not a normal reaction I have. Mm-hmm. And I had this, I thought it was just like me being me, whatever have you. But Maria, last night I realized that, oh my God, I can't watch it because it gave me an idea of a medical system that doesn't exist. And I was in tears when I realized this, like, because I was okay pretending to be Meredith Grey and like all of that. Yeah. But I didn't realize the unconscious messages that were coming into me, right? Like that if you're sick enough or you're rare enough, somebody is like, the medical team is going to come together and
they'll just find that one thing, that one tiny thing that points them to a disease that they've never even
and they're
going to
keep fighting for you.
And it's like, that's also why I can't watch those shows either, because it's heartbreaking to know that that's not the reality, to know that that's not how we're treated. And I mean, I'm sure there's some doctors on this earth that are good. I'm sure. But I've never met you yet, but I hope one day maybe I will. And call us maybe, please. But it's like, I really feel like these medical shows, these dramas, they give these false sense of how the medical system is, how they treat rare diseases, how they act, how they handle things, that like the ableist society who doesn't experience it in real life, absolutely no idea. All they have is this television. That's all they know.
Marie, I'm 5 years in and I had this epiphany last night and it's funny. I could probably still joke about it and like whatever in a good conversation, but I couldn't figure out why, like I was having legitimately a panic response. And that to me is like, PTSD is a spectrum disorder. And
yeah, it really is. And medical gaslighting is very traumatic. Medical gaslighting is one of the most traumatic things in the world. Like, dude, I've lived through some traumatic shit at the hands of my former boyfriends, you know? Like, I've lived through some shit. Nothing is more traumatic than the medical gaslighting that I've lived through. Like, that's what gets me still. Like, I've gotten past all of the other abuse, you know? Like, I've been able to not get triggered when I see domestic violence in movies. Like, I'm good. Medical gaslighting? I can't, like, my eyes are like tearing up just thinking about it, you know, like the medical gaslighting is the hardest thing to even live with afterwards, because then every time you go to a doctor, your word is going to happen again. Every time it doesn't happen, oh my God, it's an amazing thing. But what happens if they start to act like this and I lose this good doctor? It's like medical gaslighting, that's what it is. And so it gives us the PTSD responses, and like, I would really, really, really love to see a real show a real one, a real medical drama of like.
But
real
then that would they would have to be owning up to something, and I'm not. Then the medical community's not ready for that.
They would never take the actual accountability. They want to feel good about themselves, you know. And then like, yeah, fucking like doctors like Paolo Macarini who fucking like literally uses the medicine to kill people and then say they're dying anyway and blame it on their conditions and not his awful, awful surgical treatments that he quote unquote pioneered. It's like you can't win in the ableist society.
Marie, where can people find you if they wanted to connect?
Yeah, you can connect with me on Instagram. I'm r.a.r.e.advoc8, Rare Advocate. You can find me in the DLC, the Diverse Ability Leadership Collection. And you can also probably find me on any other social media too with the same handle.
And as I mean, I went ahead and put them all in the show notes, along with all of her links to her amazing merch. I actually just bought 2 stickers because I was obsessed. And this won't be the last conversation we have. Marie, we're going to continue the conversation. But hey, guess what? The Ableist Society is making it so that I have to actually go to a session now and make money so that I can keep Rare going, I guess. But
keep it fueled.
Thank you to all of our listeners who tune in every week as we continue to bridge the gap between rare disease and the rest of the world. Until next time, live large and stay rare.
Catch us next week for another episode. To continue the conversation about rare disease and all the unknowns that comes with it, join our Facebook group. Want even more Rare? Become a VRP member on Patreon and learn more about our stories or how to share yours by visiting bwspod.com.